I'm an alcoholic. Okay, welcome to the family meeting. Can we open this meeting with a serenity prayer, please? God, grant us serenity. Accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can.
And wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. So we have six of us that are on the panel. So each of us is going to talk about 10 minutes and talk about our experience with both with recovery and family.
Dynamics.
Family dynamics or lack of them. And I think I agreed to chair this panel if Bill wasn't on it, but Bill's here. So I don't know how the hell I ended up having to do that. And Polly, would you start us out, please?
Okay. I can't see my watch, so you have to. You'll have to help me out with time. Hi, everybody. My name's Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Polly.
And I'm really glad to be here, and I'm really grateful for the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. There's been an enormous amount of family recovery in our family. I have two sons, and those two sons went through my alcoholism with me. They were 14 and 16 years old when I got sober, and I was an alcoholic for about 16, well, I drank for about 16 years. And so these kids went entirely through my alcoholism with me. And what has happened as a result of that is I'm a woman who should never have been allowed to keep these kids. I was a military wife, and because of that, I was married to a man who was at that time, it was called the Strategic Air Command. I don't know that that's around. I don't think that's around anymore. But he was a pilot on a bomber, and he was gone for years at a time. And I was responsible for these two little boys. And I was totally incapable of taking care of them, probably from the time they were 6 and 8. I really was not very capable of taking care of these kids, and they were the product of child abuse, which I was abusive verbally and physically. And I was abusive by neglect. I was an abusive mom. These kids were placed in my care, and I was not able to care for them. And so there's a lot of problems these kids have had. Well, the big book tells us that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic becomes neurotic. And these kids have suffered a lot of trauma as a result of being children of alcoholics. However, there has been enormous healing as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the things that I also want to punch here is because I am also a member of Al-Anon. And I've been in the rooms of Al-Anon for 27 years. And I tell you, I know today that I would not enjoy the program that I have in Alcoholics Anonymous if it were not for the program of Al-Anon. And since I'm sitting on a panel like this, I feel like I can talk about that. And when I got sober, I realized that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And there was lots going on. And my oldest son has more. He is also a year. He on October the 31st, he had a year of sobriety, but he also has a lot of other problems. And so he was having. My oldest son was trying to commit suicide every other day, and my youngest son was using drugs and alcohol. And I'm not sure to this day that I would be sober if it were not for the rooms of Al-Anon. And what happened for me is that I went, I got a call from my oldest son's wife that he had put a pair of scissors in his stomach, and my other son was running, he was living with us, and he was running Venice Beach. And so it was a nightmare. And I was in so much pain over these kids, and I walked into an AA meeting after getting this information, and I truly am one of these people in AA who believes in taking the solution to the meeting and the mess to your sponsor. I believe in that. But I walked into that meeting because I'd gotten that call prior to coming into that meeting, and I just started. You know, my oldest son is in the hospital, and he's, you know, in really critical condition. My youngest son is somewhere down on Venice Beach, and, you know, wham, wham, wham. I was just going on and on and on. And this old guy in the back of the room, he hollers out, "You need to turn those boys over." And I jump back up. I know none of you guys would do this. And, you know, I'm 5 years sober, so I'm pretty, you know, I'm really sick anyway. And I jump up and I said, "You want to tell me how to do that?" Well, of course he didn't know. And so what happened was, but when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And this lady walked up to me and she says, "Honey, I need to take you to an Al-Anon meeting." And that next day, I went to an Al-Anon meeting with this lady. And these women just loved me. They just circled around me and they said, "Of course you feel the way you feel. You're a mother. That's how mothers feel." She said, "What we're going to show you how to do an Al-Anon is to love those children without it killing you." And I am so grateful for that, because I believe that I'm sober today because of an Al-Anon woman who was a double winner. And because of that, I have what I have today. Well, what happened is my youngest son, about 10 or 11 months later, it wasn't quite a year, my youngest son calls me up on the phone and he says, "Mom, I want what you have." And I told him that he needed to go to Al-Anon. He said he didn't think he needed it that bad. I mean, to AA, and he didn't think he needed it that bad. But what happened was, is he ended up going to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what he said is, as he said, he says this all the time in his talk. He says, "I've heard my mother talk hundreds of times, and I promise you she's never made it sound as bad as it really is." And he does that to get a laugh. But what happens is what he did is he saw what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me. And what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me is took a mean, violent woman that was very abusive, and I had a psychic rearrangement and a spiritual awakening. And I heard one time, this not too long ago, this guy says, "Well, I'm 30 years sober, but, you know, I'm really not all that different." Well, I'm telling you, I'm not anything like I was. I am not anything like the woman I was when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no way I could take the hair on my grandson's head and shake his head and pull his hair like I did to my children. I couldn't do that. That woman, as long as I stay in these rooms doing this, doesn't exist. She doesn't exist. But I know who and what I am. And I know if I don't do the things that this program tells me to do, if I don't constantly do the steps, if I'm not working the traditions, if I'm not doing the concepts, if I'm not working with others, and I don't know, the book is so clear to me. It says if we're to grow spiritually, we have to be working with others. That's it. I can go sit and meditate and go sit on a mountaintop and do all that stuff, and I don't know if a person like me is going to change. I don't know. But I know with the steps and doing what it says to do that we can change. And we can have a psychic rearrangement, because that's not who I am today. And by doing that, my son now has 26 years of sobriety. My oldest son has 1 year. So if you're out there and you just, you know, you're waiting for the miracle, just don't give up. Just don't give up. He got sober when I was 32 years sober. Now, I know that he has some other things that's wrong with him. But whatever, it's working. Now, right now in our family, there's a lot of different stuff going on. In fact, right now in my life, I feel like the rug has just been pulled out from under my life. I mean, I'm in so much change. And I had ideas. I figured by the time I was 33 years sober, I'd be better than this. And I figured by the time I was 70 years old, I wouldn't be doing this stuff, moving and all this stuff. But we ended up having to sell our house up in Birch Bay, and we're moving to Jacksonville, Florida. I mean, you know, like, how much further could you go? I mean, I don't know if you could hardly go any further unless I was moving to the Keys in Florida. But, you know, we're doing this, and it's and there's a part of me that hates to leave, but there's a part of me that's so excited. Well, that's that part's going on. My youngest son is in right now, is separated from his wife, and they're in the process of getting a divorce. My oldest son has been divorced for 2 years, and I mean, but this youngest family, I just thought they were the cat's meow. You know, everything was going to go good. Well, let me tell you what miracles happen in Alcoholics Anonymous when we least think about it. I had this son over here in California that was just kind of out in the weeds. You know, when he got sober, he didn't want to talk about it. He had to go to detox, but he wasn't talking about AA. He didn't want anybody to say anything about it. Don't you dare tell anybody I'm in AA and all that kind of stuff. Well, what's going on with his youngest brother? He was always so jealous of his youngest brother because everything, James kind of like had the Midas touch when it came to making money. You know, it seemed like that was, you know, he's just one of those kind of people that just kind of happened. And Russ is over here struggling with money and all of that stuff. And he had this jealousy of James. Well, he's watching James have such a problem with his three children and such of that, what's going on. And all of a sudden, Russ is saying, I thought the worst problems in the world were money until I saw what was happening to my brother. And my two boys have never been close. But right now, because of all this that's going on, there's a new miracle taking place in my son wouldn't call me on the phone at living up in Birch Bay. He wouldn't call me on the phone. It's not that he doesn't love me. He just used to say, I don't have anything to say. And am I done?
Just wind up.
Okay, wind up. So he would just said that I don't have anything to say. But what happened is that now he's calling me all the time asking about his brother. And what's happening is James and Dave and I, we're all going to California and have Christmas with Russ because his wife's taking his children somewhere and James's wife is taking his children somewhere. And we're all going to California for Russ. And Russ cannot believe that we're all going to come have Christmas with him. The miracle, we don't know. I mean, it's absolutely, Clancy talks about it's a disease of perception. It's just my perception. Everything that looks like it could be the worst it could be, always in my life, turns out to be the best. Thanks.
Thank you, Polly. Love you. And next we're going to go to Ralph.
My name's Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ralph.
I'm from one of six boys. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. My father was an alcoholic, and he got put out the house when I was relatively young. And my mom raised six boys by herself. My story is not one where I started drinking really early. I didn't. I made it through school. I'm not going to be my daddy. I was a high achiever. I was an accomplisher. I was a get-things-done kind of guy. And I had dreams and goals and ambitions, and I started drinking when I was in high school, didn't have any problems with it. I wasn't drinking a lot. Went off to college and then took off from there. Higher education in every sense of the word. And I started drinking and I started using then in college. First guy from my neighborhood to go. My younger brother, a year younger than me, same profile. You know, my brother Ron, same profile. High achiever, student body president, class president, straight A student. He went off to college. And then my brother under him. First three guys from my neighborhood. My mother was really proud of us. She had done, you know, I had a mom that sacrificed a lot. You know, she was a welfare mother when I was little. And she put herself back through school. She graduated from college the same year as my brother Ron graduated from college, a year after me. Then she started working and retired from her job. Remarkable lady, you know. And had always had sons who made her proud. And later in life, these same sons ended up every single one of us, all six of us. You know, we all ended up in the life together, and we're, you know, and we almost killed our mom. You know, deep into my alcoholism, after I had gotten married, I got put out of my house. That was in about 1982 or three, and all my brothers ended up getting put out of their homes at the same time, and all six of us ended up back in my mom's house. You know. And retrospectively, it sounds funny, but when you live in that, you know, and his parents in here, you know, I had one, later on in skipping ahead, I had one stepson who was really, you know, this young man was drinking, using, smoking, and he was trying to stay with me, and I couldn't take it. So I couldn't imagine times six, you know, and we damn near killed my mom. She almost had a nervous breakdown. My mother is way more spiritually connected than I'll ever be. And she, without a 12-step program, she embodied all the principles that's in our 12 steps. And she's a praying lady, and she had praying people around her. So during that period of time, I'm sure that's all that sustained her, but we really, so in 1986, you know, in 85 I got introduced to the program of recovery and I didn't stay. And in 1986, my brother Ron went into a treatment program, and 3 months after that, I followed him. And I can remember Thanksgiving of 1986 was the very first time any of our family had been sober together. Ronnie took a pass, I took a pass, and we went to my mom's house on Thanksgiving Day. My other brothers were doing what it was that they did continuously. It's a trip. When two of us got taken from the equation, it seemed like it threw it kind of off kilter. And on holidays, all the boys used to give each other the sign after we ate, and we'd slowly disappear and do what we did. And this particular holiday, Ron and I were at home, and we were sober. And my other brothers saw what was going on, and they did what they did, and they left. And 4 months after that, my brother Reggie, in trouble, not out of anything else, in trouble, because my brother and I, we never preached, never talked, never said anything. You know, when you read in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, our founder, Bill Wilson, he talked about sitting around one November, and his friend came to see him, Ebby Thatcher. And when he talked about that visit with Ebby, he talked about he expected him to do a lot of preaching and a lot of ranting. He said, but he didn't do any preaching. And he talked about Ebby's deportment, shouted out. And I guess Ron and I, because we didn't talk to my brothers at all, but we stayed through dinner, and we stayed through there. And our relationship with our mom was different, and something was different, because, you know, my brothers were doing what they do, and I don't try to impose you on me when I'm doing what I do, so we didn't do any of that. 4 months later, my brother Reggie, in trouble, you know, in trouble, and he put out a desperate call, and he went up into a treatment facility, and so now three of us were sober. And I remember December of 1987, my brother Rod, my baby brother, Ronnie, Reggie, and I were always high achievers and school guys and the rest. My baby brother Rod was street guy, hustler, dealer, and he had been in jail for a year, and he had come out, and he wanted to stay at my mom's house. Now, Ronnie and I were out of our program, and we were both staying at my mom's, and he asked if he could come. No, if you come, it's a condition. You got to go get some help. So he had gone up in a program, left early, was on Skid Row. I remember the night he called my mom and asked if he could come, and she couldn't talk to him. You know, she let her got boys who were sober talk to the ones who were still out there. And I remember when I told him, you can't come up in here. And I cried when I hung up the telephone, because my family's a tight-knit family. We don't do the street. We don't sleep on the street. And I didn't know where my brother was, and I wanted to get in my car and go look for him when I hung up the phone. And I called my sponsor, and he was like, sometimes taking the right action doesn't feel right. And so he said, nah, you did the right thing. And I remember it was really cold that December. And on Christmas Eve in 1987, he called and said, can I just come over for Christmas? And I drove down on Christmas morning, Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And you got to know my baby brother, Rod. He's a pretty boy. He's in the mirror all the time. He's really meticulous with his dress, player, you know, that kind of guy, the one. So I drove to Skid Row where he said he would be. And I drove around and I didn't see him. And so I circled the block again. And when I circled again, this guy jumped out in front of my car. And he had been trying to get my attention before, and he was waving, but I didn't recognize him. I didn't recognize this guy. He was filthy. And he jumped in my car, and when I let the windows all down, and I drove with my head out my side of the window, because I could, and we got him to my mom's house, and my grandmother was still alive, and she was over for Christmas. And when my mother took one look at him, and she sank to her, you know, her knees buckled, because this was her baby boy, and she, what he looked like. And she said, please don't let mama, don't let her mother see him. And we rushed him in the house and put him in a tub for, let the water out and ran it again, put him in the tub again, you know. And to hear Rod tell that story, he'll talk about it's the best Christmas he ever had. And December 25th of this year, my baby brother will be celebrating 23 years of recovery, you know. And so it ended up with the white boys, and that's what we call all of us. And then that changed the dynamic of my family. It changed the whole dynamic. This past Thanksgiving, we were all at my brother Ron's house, and it's like when we were kids again. And it's been like this for a long time, you know, on Christmases and on holidays, and you know, it's laughter in the house, and it's a sober house. Of, you know, we married sober people, and we have sober kids, and our kids don't know anything about Uncle So and So being in the. I mean, they hear stories because we're open. You know, we are an AA family. You know, that's what we do, and that's how we live. And so it's open, but it's stories to them, you know, that my daughter can't imagine. You know, my oldest daughter is 27 years old right now. She was 2 when I got sober. And she was in this world while I was in the life, but she doesn't know that guy. You know, my oldest daughter is just graduated from law school. University of San Francisco. She's getting ready to take the bar. And, you know, my youngest daughter is 15, and she's never seen her daddy loaded. And one day at a time, she never will, you know. And I am grateful to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful to the restorative process that you guys have put and introduced me to in my life. I'm grateful to have a power. I'm grateful that when it was my turn, for that stepson I had who's 31 years old right now, and he's coming up on 91 days. He called me yesterday, and he's been trying this thing, and he relapsed, and he tried it, and he relapsed. We went to my daughter's law school graduation, and he had about 6 months then. And it's a trip because I've been away too long. I've been away too long. And I it's some stuff I miss. You know, sponsorship is really important, you know, and it's, now I'm really clear on why most of the people I sponsor now, it's been a long time since I've had a wet one and somebody really brand new, because I miss some stuff, and I beat myself up. We went to my daughter's law school graduation, and so the whole family was up there. Now, she had a crew when she graduated, the young set, and they all went partying that night, you know, after the graduation. Well, my son went too, with her friends and the rest of them. I didn't think. It just missed me. Well, he didn't make it back from the party sober. You know, my daughter drinks, so her friends drink. There are people that he really admired, the ones that, you know, she had her friends, and he's a guy that's running. So anyway, he didn't make it back from the party sober. I kicked myself for a while. Why didn't you think about it? You didn't send an escort and all the stuff. When they're close to you, all the things that we talk about in Chapter 7, they don't come to your mind, which is why it's hard to work with your own family. I want to shield them. I want to guard them. I want to bodyguard them. I want to beat myself up. Dude, it is what it is. You know, he had the experience he felt, and now he's back again. And I am I'm grateful to have a fellowship, and I'm grateful to this program. And any opportunity I get now, for me, and I'm getting out of here, Bob. For me, I have to, you know, I get the opportunity to do stuff like this, and I really, 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 really enjoy it and I'm grateful for it. But I'm really grateful for the opportunity to show up at school Monday through Friday. I'm grateful my daughter is in a performing arts high school. It's some stuff that I'm going to have to stop doing because I'm not missing any of the performances. I'm not missing any of the things that are important for her. And I am So anyway, if you're sitting here and you've given up hope on them, my mom had given up hope. My mom had damn near died. And it's been turned around for her. We gave her a surprise 75th birthday party a couple of years ago. We surprised her, which is hard to do. And at the end of the night, she said, you know, because my mom had babies early in life and she was the oldest of her siblings. And she said, Ralph, this is the first time I've ever had a party. So after 75 years of living on this earth, I wanted to thank the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous because my mama had a party. Thank you.
Thank you, Ralph. Michael.
My name's Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michael.
Do I have to say it again? Michael, alcoholic. Let's see, when I got sober, my family consisted of my mother, my daughter, three brothers, and one sister. And I am so very fortunate that I was told early on that I could not get any of them sober. The only one that didn't drink was my sister. She was the perfect one in the family, and she still is as far as I'm concerned. I just love her to pieces. But all three of my brothers were alcoholic, and my mom was an alcoholic, and she had been in and out of AA for years. And she showed me AA didn't work. This is the last place I would have come. But when I got on my knees and I said that prayer to God, please, I don't care how you do it, but please just get me sober, I ended up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and old-timers had me wait in the parking lot. They went and bought me two beers, made me drink them before the meeting because they knew I wasn't going to make it. I mean, I was going through DTs, and that was my last drink. But my mom's still drinking, and my daughter, who used to take care of me, I mean, she was the caretaker. I mean, you can hear her talk, and she'll talk about me laying naked on the front room floor, and she's picking Doritos off of me, you know, because I was just a sloppy, ugly drunk. And she was in this caretaking role. And when I got sober, she didn't have to worry about me anymore. And she went off into drug addiction and alcoholism like you wouldn't believe. How it happened so fast shocked me. And it wasn't until years later we talked about her, why she started doing what she was doing. And you know, she came to the conclusion it was just because she didn't have to worry about me anymore. 3 months sober, and my mom decides that she's going to try AA one more time. And so she comes into AA, and she had 4 years of sobriety. But she went to cable producing school at that time, and she was the second cable producer in the city of Long Beach, which is, she didn't get sponsors, she didn't do her steps, she didn't do the things. She started producing a show called High on Life. It was all about sobriety. It was really great. She won several awards, but she's not working a program. And, of course, she drank again. And we're having these battles about her drinking and having this High on Life program on TV. But I'm trying to back off. I'm trying to mind my own business. And then my three brothers, one of my brothers, I used to take his two little girls, baby girls, every weekend, but I wouldn't stay there and visit him because they drank and smoked. It was really bad. And I had allergies to the smoke. And so I'd go pick up the girls and take them. And I would never stay there and visit with them. Well, one day he was really mad at me. And he said, if we're not good enough for you to talk to stay and talk to, you're not good enough to take my children. And he would not let me see those girls for a very long time. And anyway, I made amends to him several times because that's what I've been taught to do in this program, and he just wouldn't have anything to do with it. When I moved here to Georgia, I was here a couple years, and it's just one of those God things. I just picked up the phone, and I called him. I just said, Perry, I just want to have a relationship with my brother. And he was open to it. He was open to it, and I sent him some money for his birthday, and he accepted it this time. And then a couple weeks later, he dropped dead of his disease. He just dropped dead in front of his four kids, 5 through 12 years old. And they were all whisked off to Ireland because that's where the mother's from, is Ireland. So the kids were raised in Ireland. I never got to see them again until recently. I had two of them when they turned 21. They looked me up. And they came to visit Ted and I. And I would swear that that's the best thing that ever happened to them, going to Ireland, because they're in college. They've got things that are happening for them that never would have happened the way that they were all always being taken away, hauled off to DFACS for all the fighting in the home, everything that went on. So as much as I hate to say it was a good thing my brother died, that's not the good thing, but being whisked off to another country and getting out of the influence and the environment that they were in was a good thing. And at the same time, Barry dropped dead of a heart attack, and his twin brother was in the hospital with cirrhosis of the liver. He was gonna die. And I was able to get on a plane and go to Colorado to see him, and he pulled through. You know, in the big book, it talks about different stages of drinking, and it says at one stage of drinking, if you've not yet made chronic, which I am chronic, given a good reason, you can still quit on your own. And cirrhosis of the liver and his twin brother dropping dead was enough for my brother Alan to quit drinking. He never needed AA. He was resentful if I even suggested it, lived in a little town. He, no way is anybody going to know that he's got a drinking problem, and everybody knew anyway. So today he's sober without a program, and he's pretty darn miserable, and I'm just so thankful I get to see it. I'm so grateful I get to have the fun and the laughter in this program. My daughter eventually got sober. My third brother went to a meeting with me. I was driving through Oxnard, and I was going to speak at a speaker's meeting, and he was not an alcoholic at that time. I didn't even know he was an alcoholic, and anyway, I was the speaker at the meeting. And they asked for people that were new to stand up, and my brother stood up. I couldn't believe he stood up. He sat down. I said, Bobby, I didn't know you were an alcoholic. He said, I didn't either. But what happened to him is he had a housekeeper, and she thought he had a bottle collection, because every time he drank a bottle, he threw it up in the back of the cupboard, and she was straightening out the cupboard, so she straightened out all these bottles, all these cupboards, with all these bottles, and he said that just flashed before his eyes, you know, just flashed before his eyes when she asked about newcomers, and he stood up as a newcomer, and today he's sober. My daughter is sober about 20 years, but she's been through a lot. She's hanging on to some things that she never did let go of, and I think they're making her very ill. She's been bedridden for 4 years, and she's really dying of liver disease. Not from cirrhosis, but fatty liver disease. And it's heartbreaking, and I do need Al-Anon. I need to learn how to take care of her without it killing me. Half of my difficulties with my knee are from picking her up. She's 350 pounds. And so that's been very, very difficult. But she is almost 20 years sober, and for that I'm eternally grateful. She would have been dead a long time ago if she was drinking. But my mom is the one that I just want to close with, and she's a pretty incredible lady. And the longer I'm sober, the more I love her. You know, and I didn't take a drink till I was 25 because I was never going to be an alcoholic like my mom. And I managed not to drink for 25 years. But once I got into AA, she came in, she got her 4 years, and then she started drinking again. And You know, I just had to, just accept her unconditionally. And this program gave me the ability to love her no matter what, even though she couldn't quit drinking or she didn't want to quit drinking. She was enjoying the nightlife of cable TV and all the famous people she was meeting, and she enjoyed that. She would still come to meetings. You know, in the big book, in the second foreword, it gives you a description about of how many, what's the word, not description, it gives you information about how many people stay sober at a, I hear the soldiers that I work with today, they come in to my house and they're very discouraged because they've just been told one out of 10 people that come into the program stay sober. One out of 10. And I go, where do they get that information? I mean, nobody's ever asked me anything about my sobriety. Have you been? You probably have been. You've been. I mean, where do they get those figures? All I know is in the second foreword, and I have compared this with the people I sponsor. In the second foreword, it says those who really try, 50% sober up right away and never drink again. And then it says the other 25% relapse and come back and get permanent sobriety. And the last 25% that come in the program and they really try, their life greatly improves. And even though I don't feel like she really tried, she still did keep coming to meetings and she did the minimum. And all I can tell you is my mom was in that 25% where her life greatly improved. And she died of cancer and she wanted to have a party before she died, a funeral before she died. She's very dramatic. And so my sister and I had what's called the awake wake for my mother. And I don't know who the caterers, whoever catered it, told the newspaper showed up. And so I get up the next day, and on the front page of the Long Beach Press Telegram, which is a big newspaper, is a picture of my mom, my daughter, and you know, all these people that are at this party, and it says awake wake, you know, and it tells this story about, and she got up and she sang, it's my party, I'll die if I want to, I'll die if I want to. I mean, she's just so dramatic, you know, and so this is all in the newspaper. Well, then the Associated Press picked that up, and so now it goes all over the United States because Associated Press picked it up. Now we've got all these talk shows calling us, trying to get on their talk show before she dies. And my mom is having the best time of her life. Dying of cancer, I'm falling apart, and I'm also very resentful. Why are all these things happening to her? But anyway, she chose the Maury Povich show, and that was the show that, and they liked drama, so they wanted my daughter and myself on the show with her. My sister wanted to go, but they didn't want her. She was too normal. So anyway, she's on the Maury Povich show. Then CBS wanted to write a movie about her and wrote all of this stuff. I mean, and Carol Burnett was going to play her role, and it was just the weirdest thing I ever saw. But the last couple months of my mom as dying, you know, I was there taking care of her and working, and I'd take her to work in a wheelchair, and she got where she could no longer go. She just laid by a window where I would sit and talk to all my AA friends. They'd come over, bring food, and try and take care of me, hold me up. And one of the last things my mom said to me just before she died is she never realized how selfish and self-centered she was. That was the first, those were the last words that came out of her mouth. And she finally was able to let go because it was hard for her to die. She didn't do the work in this program, and she had a lot of fear of dying. Anyway, today every time I turn around, I see something in her I just love more and more. And I'm thankful that she's my mom. I'm grateful that I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for getting on airplanes and meeting people like you.
Thank you, Michael. Bill.
I'm Bill Roop. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm so old. These people talk about things that are going on now. Those are in my past. My kids went through troubles, you know. They all worked out. My wife and I, we got married in Chicago. Neither one of us drank. I went away to war, and when I came back, I was a drunk. When I came back, she was an alcoholic. Anyway, we had kids. And when you got kids, you got problems. But I never had any dramatic problems like you people had. My God. My wife solved some of them with a wooden stick. The kids talk about it now. You know, they're 60, 58. Hey, I remember Mom with the, what was it, a stirring spoon. What did they used to call those? Wooden spoons? Wooden spoon. All she had to do was raise it, and the kids would start obeying. See, all the things I've heard, I've never heard anybody say anything about God. All I heard was problems, problems, problems. AA solves problems. No, AA is a God-given program. It says so in the big book. It says it all through all the pages, through all the steps. The reason there's peace and tranquility in my house is because God's there. I am no longer the ruler of the universe. He is. My wife died. We were married 64 years. We had a lot of friction in those 64 years. Some of it was because I didn't realize she was boss. Took me 20 years to realize that. We're married 64. I was going to dump the bitch. One of my Irish friends from Wisconsin came down and told me, the devil you got's better than the devil you'll get. So I stayed with the devil I had. The reason I mention that is some people, when they get married, they think everything's going to be great. You take a woman who's different than a man who's different than a woman, brought up in different environments, and you put them together and they're supposed to go peacefully into the sunset. No, they fight, kick, scream. But luckily, my wife and I stayed along together long enough to get the best. Why did we stay together? Because we were broke. If either of us had money, we'd have dumped the other one, I'm sure. Anyway, I can only tell you the way it worked. So what's happened now? I only had one kid that was an alcoholic. He's got 30 years sober. He's helped a lot of people in AA. He's passed it on. Of course, he's also just finished with 10 years in jail. See, a lot of people, when they've taken their fifth step, it's not enough just to say, here's what I did. You got to quit doing it. Sobriety is not an answer. Don't pay your car payments and tell them, but I've been sober 15 years. They'll take your car. Get on an airplane without a ticket. But I'm sober. But I'll tell you one thing. Thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that was given to me by a never-loving God in 1957, changed my life, my kid's life, and my wife's life. What is life like now? There's love in our family. None of my family are bickering or fighting with each other. It says that in the Bible. Two commandments given, love God with all your heart and love your neighbors yourself. Then he goes on to talk about feeding the sheep. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Our job is to love you, wherever you are. If my kid's going to hang himself, I love him. I wish you wouldn't. And I've been through some stuff with my kids. But I fall in love with my kids. Today we got love in our home. Why? Because God's there. He's in all their homes. They're not in charge of their house. My boy Billy isn't. My boy Rich isn't. My boy John isn't. And I'm not. I just wanted to mention that because we talked about problems. I don't have any problems. Over the years, people have had opportunities for emotional growth. See, God, the only way I get close to God is if I got a problem. When I'm shooting pool and run the table, I don't say, hey, Dave, I'm close to God. Or if I throw the dice and I get a winner, I don't say, hot diggity God. But let me get my testicles in a crack. God! We get close to God through problems. So be grateful for your problems, and I thank you all.
It takes two of us.
I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm about as grateful for the program and its benefit to my family. From what I've been told, I'm the fourth generation or fifth generation alcoholic in our family. I have one brother that's an alcoholic. Linda and I have three sons that are in the program. And the program has touched every aspect of our lives, both in our marriage and in our extended family. My early sobriety, I wasn't much of a father. I was sometimes abusive with my kids, physical with them. The hair grabber you talked about, I did that sober. And I was the guy who was at a meeting every night, and I wasn't the little league coach or whatever. I was just doing what I did. I just chased after AA. From the moment I walked in the front door of Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt like it was my place. And the grace was, of course, they had a wonderful mother at home that was taking care of things. The level of self, and I think a lot of people would say, Bob's really doing a good job. I got a lot of attention in AA. I was the youngest guy in our group for a long time. I got a lot of pats on the head. I got pats everywhere except home and work. wasn't very good at either of those two things. And in one way, I was doing the best I knew how. But what happens to us over a period of time is if you involve yourself in the program and if you involve yourself in the steps, which is I was given the gift of having good sponsorship and exposure to the steps, you start to change. And it takes a while. I mean, I always tell the people that I sponsor, you see those shadows out there? Those are people. Because you're just so self-obsessed. You know, I'm a young father. I'm 24 years old. When we started to have kids, I'm worried about how I'm going to make a living. I remember my first thought, well, when Linda got expectant, was, our family income's going to be cut in half. You know, I mean, it was this very selfish thought. It wasn't hooray. You know, you look back on it now and you just, but I was narcissistic. I was very immature and I was enormously self-centered and didn't have any sense of the depth of my self-centeredness. And that all I can tell you is that by my actions in Alcoholics Anonymous over a period of time, that changed. And I became a better father and a better husband. And without even necessarily the intent, I always had the intent and desire. But I wasn't able to accomplish that on my own. And it was just as a result of trying to consistently work with the steps and program in our life. I think love and God, alcoholics seem to have the capacity to do the extraordinary and have a great deal of difficulty with the ordinary. We have trouble with paying bills. We have trouble with buying car insurance. We have trouble staying married. We have trouble with careers. We can get jobs, but we have trouble with careers. And it's that sort of marathon sort of thing about life. It's sort of taking things on with the maturity that I didn't have and many of us don't have. But over a period of time, if you work the program, we have the opportunity for some of those defects of character, I think, to be stripped from us. And as a result of that happening, we are able to attend to life on life's terms better than we have ever been able to do so before. And that's what my experience has been, both as a parent. I look back on it right now, and our three boys, our oldest boy has 22 years, and the middle boy is 19 years, and our youngest has 13. And I think, my God, if I hadn't cleaned my act up and gotten to be a more responsible parent and loving parent, when they developed the problem of alcoholism and drug dependency, would they have wanted what I had? You know, if they could have gotten to the point and they didn't want anything that old man had. But because of your work on me and God's work on me over a period of time, I woke up, did more inventories, took a look at, you know, at things in a different sort of way. And my story is one of kind of growing up. It never was as fast as I wished it was. I made very significant changes at 7 or 8 years in sobriety. I wish I would have made them at 2 and 3 years, but I didn't. But because I stayed, and because I stayed active, and because I was doing the best I knew how to do it, I got the chance to do it at 7 or 8 years of sobriety, and it's been kind of an ongoing sort of process. I think being a husband or a father takes everything. I think it takes 125% of whatever you have. I think having children is like having a bowling alley installed in your head. I mean, it's one of the great privileges of life, but it's one of the most demanding processes that I think we will ever be. It's one of the great privileges of life. I look at it today. We are now grandparents, and we have a 6.5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. What I see today in a young child is so different than what I saw as a 24 or 25 or 26-year-old young man. I mean, it is just, it's a different set of eyes. It is I'm just a different man coming in there. And I think today, more than I ever have at any other point in my life, I'm able to love. I'm able to give, because it's not all about me as much as it used to be about me. It's still about me often. But it's not as blindly so as it used to be. I really now am at the point in my life, and have been for some time, that I can truly attend to other people and not have all the attention on me. I mean, if you would start to tell me something about you, I'd have to tell you that I had a similar experience. I mean, I almost couldn't, you know, when one of the kids would get in trouble at school, they used to have to worry about me. You know, what dad's reaction would be in the situation. Isn't that horrible? But, I mean, you couldn't, even when your children are having difficulty, they have to deal with you in that situation. And I'm not proud of that, but I'm glad it's not like that today. I'm glad that today I can serve my children, love my children, be there for my children and my spouse. But I think it's just the nature of life. I think that was my path. Those were the lessons that I need to learn. Some people come to that intuitively. I look at my son today. He is such a good father. I mean, he is just such a good father. And it's almost like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of work in it. But it's almost as if it's just natural that he just, you know, that he was gifted it seems to me that he's gifted. And for whatever reason, I was too self-centered. So my path was to deal with that. The good news is that I think Alcoholics Anonymous and the path towards God, whatever you have to deal with, whatever you have to learn in order to get the fullness of life, and whether you have to learn about work or about marriage or about parenting or about staying out of jail or about not drinking, our program puts us, this is our path. And whatever those issues are, whatever our shortcoming, whatever our defects of character, whatever the causes and conditions that brought us to the front door of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a set of spiritual principles that's going to be our lesson. Each of our lessons are a little bit different, and yet in the balance and in the whole, they're more the same. And I guess if a bunch of normal people heard the introduction when Bill talked about you guys are all talking about problems, I think sometimes we should talk about problems. Because sometimes you get the impression about I used to be a jerk, I came to AA, and it's all okay. And sometimes when you're sitting in the audience and you're sober and it's not quite all okay, it is a comforting conversation, at least, to say that we're all still dealing with life, and sometimes we don't deal, you know, sometimes it isn't quite as pretty as we would like it to be. And I think outsiders would come in here and maybe they'd be a little shocked and not that positive about the way we would talk about some of the issues that we were in our lives before. But I love that we can have those conversations with each other and that there is still some humor in those conversations. And I like the dignity, the fact that we're all in the game, that we couldn't talk about those things if we really weren't in the game. And that is the most important thing. It isn't always that we're having 100% success. The question is, are you a player? Do you have a uniform? Do you, you know, if going to Alcoholics Anonymous became against the law, would they have enough evidence to convict you if you went, you know, to court? And I just, every once in a while, I think, I just couldn't imagine what my, if I were alive, I couldn't imagine what my life would be without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you for that. And with that, I will turn that over to my wife, Linda, to close us out.
Hi, I'm Linda Bazans, and I'm a member of the Al-Anon Family Group. Wow, what an order. I came to Al-Anon when I was 21 years old, just because I wanted to look good, thought I should support my husband-to-be. Eventually, I became serious about my program and changed my direction from going for him to getting crazy enough to know that I needed to go for me. I got the tips on how to make him behave, and they were the 12 steps, but they more applied to how to make me behave. And I started on a journey. Little did I know how important that journey would be. When our oldest son, Bill, was about 16, 15, 14, somewhere in that range, he started using alcohol and drugs. And it was quite troublesome in our home. When he was 18, we had him evaluated, and long story, wonderful story, but long, he sobered up and has been sober since he was 18. Wow, you know, it's all solved, everything's okay. No. The next one made Bill look like a choir boy in his behavior. And, you know, he was very much on the other side of the law and destructive, very destructive. And when Peter was 19 after DWIs and being kicked out of school and all sorts of interesting things, he was sobered up at 19. And so we got these two sober young men in our home and going off to college, and everything just seems fine. And Daniel, who is 11 years younger than the oldest, all of a sudden started to smell funny and look funny. And we really didn't have any idea how funny he really was. And I was angry. No way. There's no way I have to do this again. Come on. 3 out of 3? That isn't right. I know people, they have 5 kids. They don't have any alcoholism. This isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. It can't happen. And it happened. And I went back to the newcomers group. I don't know how long. Sort of figure it out. I was 24 years in the program at that time. 24 years. And I was as much of a newcomer as any newcomer could be. I was crazy, I was hurt, I was angry, I was resentful. The program was like, I think it was available to me, but I sure wasn't using it in a way that was meaningful. And so I came as a newcomer. And for some wonderful reason, Daniel sobered up at 17. I don't know why we are so lucky that we have three men, they're not so young anymore, who are sober. But somebody said here, you know, don't give up before the miracle. I do believe that our God offers everybody the opportunity for sobriety. I think it takes some of us longer to open the box. And if you're having those difficulties, I really invite you to this wonderful program called Al-Anon. Because if it weren't for Al-Anon, I came because of Bob. But I always knew I could, if I needed, divorce Bob. Not my choice, but I knew that was an option.
It was.
At times it really was. But what do you do when it's your kids? What do you do then? You love them through it, and you go through the pain. And I just loved what Polly said. I wrote it down. Learn how to love your children without it killing you. And that's what Al-Anon did for me. And I think I still, with going to Al-Anon, was able to be a functioning adult in our family and still a person of service, as much as I felt like I was bleeding. And yet, the alcoholism was happening to the kids. So this is a place where we grow up. This is a place where we talk about what's going on. This is a place where we tell each other the truth. And I don't think there's a lot of places like that out there in the world today. And I came to look good. And I grew up here. Thank you so much for this program.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. Would all those who would desire to please stand up and help us close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer.